Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. Today, I am joined by, first of his name, Jesse Gomez.
Hello.
Why did you say so long to react?
I was just so excited to be introduced like that. Thank you so much.
I also need to think of another quick fantasy thing to attach to Matt's name, so I'm just going to say Kingslayer Matt Jones.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Yeah. Nice.
Is it?
welcome to the Dragon Special, by the way.
Yeah,
the IGN UK podcast.
So I'm sure everybody out there knows that there is a couple of huge shows out there right now that feature dragons and exotic lands. So we're here today. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about Rings of Power, and we're going to talk about Welcome to Wrexham. Equally good shows. But also we're going to talk about House of the Dragon. So House of the Dragon, Rings of Power... Both come out around the same time, both sort of, you know, they have similarities. So we thought, why not do a podcast special where we just talk about these things? We're going to talk about what we think of the show. And we've also got a couple of games that we're going to play around the shows. We've also got your audience feedback. So Matt did a tweet yesterday on the IGN UK account and asked what you guys think of the shows. So we're going to read some of those out later. So let's kick off. What should we kick off with? Rings of Power, Jesse, because I looked right at your face then. Rings of Power is definitely the one.
I feel
it
glowing.
You want to talk about it.
Well, I mean, where do we begin? I feel like there's so much to talk about with the 2 hours.
Let's start off with, let's do some overview. Like, what's your general impression so far of Rings of Power?
I'm very much enjoying Rings of Power, unsurprisingly. I know we're going to get onto it later, but there's this current juxtaposition between House of the Dragon where, you know, everyone is telling you like you're a bastard and they're going to chop your head off and, you know, fuck off and stuff like that. And then you've got the more like typical fantasy dialogue in terms of Rings of Power. It's more about that adventure, that sort of spectacle of like theatrical fantasy that I've always loved about Middle-earth. So having those two shows sort of together at the same time that you can sort of watch back and forth and really enjoy. Yeah. But Rings of Power specifically, I'm very much enjoying.
Cool. We'll get to House of Dragon. Let's do them one at a time. But so Rings of Power, Matt, what's your overall impression so far?
I caught that first episode like last week, and I wasn't really feeling it to begin with and kind of set it aside. I was like, you know, Galadriel stuff at the beginning didn't really catch me. Could kind of like feel myself just reaching for my phone and like not really paying all that much attention. I was like, I'm going to set this aside and get back to it when I'm really in the mood. And lo and behold, get an invitation to go onto the IGN UK podcast. So I had to rush up and do my homework. And I spent last night watching both of the episodes that are currently available. And a little moment happened during the second episode where I was like, I'm in here now. I'm like, I'm all about this. This is so, like, this has captured me, the kind of writing that they're doing. This, like, interesting little tidbit that's happened that I hope I see way more of. Just go right into it. It's the Thorin and Elrond scenes.
Right.
Yeah. This, like, the idea of them trying to focus on what immortality means in the scale of the people that you hang out with when you're immortal. Like, the idea of somebody just loving his friend so much that he's angry that he just hasn't seen him for 20 years because it seems like he doesn't care is such an interesting thing to do with the concept of immortality. Because really see that in...
Was that with Prince Durin?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I guess in, like, elves can live up to, you know, thousands and thousands of years, and I guess for Prince Durin, like, not seeing your friend for 20 years,
it's pretty bad, and that's just a blink of an eye. His line is literally, has it only been 20 years? Which is like, what? Like, yeah, and the two of them fell out just because it's like, I don't think you care about me because you've missed most of my life and it doesn't matter to you. It's like, it's utterly brilliant.
So, I completely agree with that, by the way. Like, I thought episode two was so much better than episode one. And I think the dwarf element of it was something that really, really won me round. Like, even from Lord of the Rings, I find elves to be painfully dull. Like, yeah. I think they're really dull and boring characters. It's like, congrats, you live for 5,000 years. Like, where's the sense of drama there? But the... But you're right, like, their interactions with the other races is what makes them interesting. And as soon as we entered Khazad Dûm, like, the show just sort of changed for me. Like, I was so into the dwarves, and I'm into the humans as well, because humans in these worlds are just painted as these really, like, fallible creatures. Like, the things that are just riddled with mistakes and problems and issues, and they're extremely corruptible. I think that's the interesting part about it. The plight of the elves, which the first episode was majority was the elves and the half-foots, right?
Yeah.
I found that to be quite dull. Like, I'm not sure about how I feel about the half-foots right now.
I think their dialogue's really good. Like, it's all, like, quaint and folksy. Like, their, like, idioms are really fun. But yeah, I'm not interested in the plot, especially.
It's meant to take you back to, you know, how the Fellowship of the Ring opens with just seeing Hobbiton and all the hobbits and how just they interact and that sort of like comfy culture of Middle-earth and stuff, and how I guess ultimately they're going to be the characters I guess we follow because they're the sort of fresh faces. They're the ones who are always meant to be, you know,
they're the proxy the for scenes. The audience, right? They're learning when you're learning, you know. I guess but I got that vibe way more with the hobbits and Lord of the Ring than I am so far with the Rings of Power. I mean, who knows what this storyline is with the Stranger and the Meteor and stuff. But I'm it feeling a little bit contrived for me right now. But, like, I'm excited to see where it goes. And I definitely think there's interest. I definitely have an idea of who I think the Stranger is supposed to be. They don't call him the Stranger for no reason, right? Like, it's definitely going to be revealed as somebody important down the line.
He's Aragorn.
Yeah.
He just shrinks before.
Fuck everything up. Everyone will be pissed off.
Cool. So, Jesse, how did you feel about the first episode? Because me and Matt have just, you know, outlined that we were massive fans of it at first, but we've sort of grown to like it in the second episode. How did you find it off the bat?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm coming at it from an angle that I've always loved a lot of Tolkien's works and stuff. Like, you know, in secondary school, I was reading through the Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit, and I also had the films as well and the games. Massive fans of just that entire world, essentially. And I guess if you're going to watch any sort of adaptation of Tolkien's work, it's going to be a bit slower paced at first. I was expecting that from the bat. Like, looking at the Fellowship of the Ring, it takes about an hour or so until Frodo, you know, encounters the Ringwraiths and the film actually gets going. So I was expecting something a bit slower. And there's a lot to tell in terms of the story of the Rings of Power. And they're already trying to condense what they have because the text is spread across, you know, a massive span of time over, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 years of like world building or whatever. And I think so far, just even on like a sort of visual spectacle sense, like Tolkien's world building is immense in Power. And a lot of what I'm seeing in Rings of Power is, I guess, speaking to me in terms of how the show is presented. Like, it's got that sort of Peter Jackson familiarity to it, because you've got places like Lindon, which is, you know, similar to Rivendell, so people can sort of connect with that. But then on the flip side of that, you've got Khazad Dûm, and you're seeing that in its heyday. And, you know, you only see that in, you know, briefly in A Fellowship of the Ring, where it's Moria and you've got the Balrog and stuff. And all these locations, everything that is visually being presented to me just looks fantastic and intricate and well lived in. And I think that's because like the first episode is a little bit dry, but it's in terms of what's being treated to me as a fan, I'm really enjoying, I guess.
So I think it's something that we haven't mentioned so far, what you've just brought up is like, I think it goes without saying that visually, like Rings of Power is spectacular, right? Yeah. It looks incredible. The set designs are incredible. The costumes, everything about the way it's presented is beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something that can you can hide behind a bad story behind.
Oh,
sometimes,
yeah,
not that saying
sure,
this is a bad story so far. I think it's a bit of a mixed bag so far, and we'll see where it goes. But I did see a lot of the narrative being talking about the visuals first and not necessarily the story aspect of it, which obviously is the most important part. But yeah, and I think it's a bit of a cliche to say it now because everyone's kind of saying it, but you can see the money on the screen, right?
Yeah, isn't this meant to be the most expensive TV show ever produced so far?
About right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's definitely clear to see and stuff. And I guess when it comes to the first episode specifically, there's a lot of little references and, I guess, callbacks and stuff to that. If you've read the text, if you've read, you know, the appendices in Return of the King or the Silmarillion, you'll get those references. But there's so much information in the first episode. You're, you know, starting to learn about Valinor and, you know, what that means to the elves. You'll learn about Morgoth and stuff and all these things that if you've only ever watched Peter Jackson's trilogy, you're not going to know really about any of this. So it's sort of, it's trying to reintroduce yourself to something that feels a bit familiar, but also entirely new as well, which can be a lot. Because I saw a lot of people online saying there's like a gazillion characters I'm trying to remember right now in the Rings of Power. And I totally get that.
But that's feel overwhelmed, though.
No, I feel like that's with most fantasy shows, right? Like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, if you hadn't read A Song of Ice and Fire and you were watching Game of Thrones for the first time. Jesus, that took age. I remember my folks watching it, and I constantly had to remind them of character names and who people were and stuff.
Yeah.
And only because I committed it all to memory by reading a lot about it. You really have to seek it out. But you're right, with Rings of Power, I think with every new fantasy show, they're like supremely like aware of that can be an issue. So they definitely try, like the fact that the dwarves and even some of the, what's the place where like Isildur lives? What's that place called?
Isildur,
Come on, Jesse, mate.
The name's fucking escaped me right now, and it's really bothering me. Oh, no.
You'll come up with it, but it's a major city, and we haven't even seen that yet. And
we should have gotten the Tolkien expert on for this.
I know Jesse knows it because I've heard him talk about it before. He's just because he's put on the spot. That's all it is. Keep thinking, and I'll carry on. But so we weren't even introduced to all the huge section of the characters because we've been seeing the media rounds. I know who the main characters are. And like so many of them haven't even been introduced yet, so I think they're treading lightly with that. And I've seen the complaint about the pace. I don't think that's a massive issue for me so far. I think it was just I found the first episode to be boring more than anything. But the pace definitely picked up. The thing I'm unsure of right now is the tone of the show. It feels like, so I always perceive Lord of the Rings to be like, well, it is extremely child friendly, right? With element like scary elements but for the children, whereas this feels like it has little bits of that, but it's a little bit more dark and a bit more aggressive. Like there's a fight scene in the second episode which is quite intense, which wouldn't feel out of place in Game of Thrones. So I'm not really sure where it sits right now. However, it's only two episodes in, so that might all
also set up. Just to revert back, my mind is unlocked that it's the Isle of Numenor
and various cities.
There we go. Bugging me.
People were screaming into the podcast about that.
We're going to get letters, yeah. I'm wondering if this show is going to show Celebrimbor turning into a ghost and then becoming friend of a guy with a broken sword.
It's definitely not going to be following that series of games, but I mean,
no idea what you're talking about.
Was it Shadow of Mordor?
Yeah,
game
Shadow of Mordor.
Stuff, if you have ended up playing that and stuff, and that's the thing. It's like Rings of Power takes place during the Second Age of Middle Earth, and like give or take, that's like 3,000 years before the events of Lord of the Rings. And right now, things seem happy because a lot of the races and societies within Middle Earth are at their height of power. But there's going to be 5 seasons of this show with it. What I'm guessing is going to culminate into the prologue of the Fellowship of the Ring, that big battle that Peter Jackson first showed. But things are going to get like extremely dark in this show. And I'm trying to gauge how they're going to handle that, because it's not quite obviously Game of Thrones where people getting their heads lopped off and, you know, guts all over the screen and stuff. But there's some nasty shit that happens.
Oh, I can imagine now it's going to be just a nice, like, oh, we're doing this fresh mining exhibition. We're going to go to this new little tunnel and be like, oh, we're so excited about the things that we're going to find in this new tunnel. They do one little crack and then the Balrog appears.
Yeah, it just
comes and fucking eats
them.
It's going to be such a, like, celebration party episode as well. They're going to have a festival planned. Yeah.
So it feels like, in terms of demographic, then it's aiming for people like yourselves who grew up as children watching Lord of the Rings, but now are adults and are just more interested in diving further into it, which, you know, it's not a bad angle, but like it feels like quite far away from what the original like Hobbit book was supposed to be. You know?
Yeah, like, that's a children's book, essentially.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying, but that's what he wrote them as, children's books to begin with, you know, and it's sort of, it's like every iteration of this world, it gets a little bit darker and a little bit more adult, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose there's similarities with like Star Wars in a way, where the first film is, you know, very much a children's film.
Mm.
And then over time, people have grown up with it and they've clamoured for it to be darker and more serious. Yeah, it's interesting. But let's go to something that isn't trying to be anything like a children's show in any way, stretch of all. So we've also got House of the Dragon. We've had 3 episodes of House of the Dragon. It's the Game of Thrones prequel series.
It was a cute little pug in that last episode. I think kids would like that.
That's true, first thing that came to mind.
That really threw me off, actually, when I thought, I was like, are pugs in Westeros?
Yeah, exactly, the existence of pugs in...
Yeah. So what's let's start with you, Matt. What's your general thoughts of House of the Dragon so far?
I think it's kind of finding its way. I think it's... It feels weird to say this now because I was quite enjoying it, but I'm more excited to see more Rings of Power than I am more House of the Dragon. And I would have felt completely differently about that even yesterday. I think that it's doing interesting things, but it feels very Game of Thrones light. Like, the stakes don't seem as high, the characters just don't seem as interesting. But this is the first season of a show compared to, you know, 6 seasons or something previously. Like, you know, my feelings about that grew over time. It's maybe a sore comparison to think about, like, how it sits now when I've only watched 3 episodes of it. But I don't think I care enough.
Interesting. Jesse, what do you think?
I think... people are still kind of miffed about, you know, that hype train, which was 3 years ago, and then the final season of Game of Thrones just being kind of naff. But I'm sort of surprised how quickly I found myself sort of getting back into that Game of Thronesy Westeros sort of mood and stuff. I feel like the current cast are good, like the Targaryens and stuff. I think it's is her name Millie Alcock who plays...
she plays a younger version of Rhaenyra, yeah.
Yeah, and I think she does she's doing a really good job. And then you've got Matt Smith, who's just a lot of the Targaryens really look like sort of funky Witcher cosplayers. I really just can't get that out of my head.
You'd see him at MCM Expo as a knockoff Geralt. Yeah, I totally get it.
So far, like, I'm enjoying the more like political chess game that's happening in the episodes that you're not really going to get in Rings of Power. Just thinking about, you know, the... what is it, King Viserys and stuff?
Yes.
Like how much of like a pliable sort of happy king he wants to be, but then you're seeing like these people sort of like slowly coming towards him and sort of manipulating him. I like that. But as of now, I'm sort of enjoying it on a very surface level, just because the only time I've ever gotten into Game of Thrones is through the TV show. I've never read any of the text, so I've never been exposed to the more like wealth of lore and story there is, I guess.
It really made me smile when you called it the text.
Yeah, exactly.
The text.
It's called a book, mate. It's called a book. So I've got to disagree with you both and say...
it's the fucking bomb.
I absolutely love House of the Dragon. Like, everything about it. From minute one, I was like, yes, this is the Game of Thrones that I love. Mm. I'm so happy to be back. Everything feels familiar to me. I've read quite a lot of the books. I've read Fire and Blood as well, which this is loosely based off.
Mm.
I think it's fantastically performed. It's also one of my biggest problems, you might have gathered from the Lord of the Rings stuff, is that how childlike it can be, how whimsical it can be, whereas Game of Thrones feels like just the right level of fantasy, but also real world, political, blood, violent sex as well. You know, like, it's exactly what I want in high fantasy. So
fantasy,
I know it's
fantasy for gamers.
Yeah. So I know, for adults. I know it's a personal preference, but for me, it's like, is Succession, but it's with dragons, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I absolutely love Succession. I love The Sopranos, which all both, you know, they kind of follow the same format, right? It's about a man at the top and his family below him and competing for power, right? And who can get to the top. And I just find that super interesting. I also love that, although I absolutely loved Game of Thrones for a long time, there's no doubt it was dense, right? There was a lot going on. There's a lot of families, a lot of names. Whereas this is purely focused on the Targaryens and just everyone within their close circle.
Yeah.
We barely leave King's Landing as well. And I think that's, in an early stage, I think that's massively to its benefit as well. It's keeping the story focused on this family and the conflicts that arise from this family. Like everything about the presentation of this world is just really speaks to me. The one thing I wasn't a massive fan of was the fact that they reused the Game of Thrones music because
I found that weird.
To me, this feels like Better Call Saul, right? In a way, that's a stupid comparison because
I get it. Yeah, it needs because to stand it's a prequel, own, right?
Yeah. But yeah, it's a prequel that's kind of telling its own unique story, not just replicating the story again.
Yeah.
I'm going to burp. Oh, God. But Better Call Saul obviously had its own theme music and presentation like that. I felt like they could have even took the Game of Thrones theme tune and just like done a version of it like they did for The Shots Wire every season.
Put a little trap beat underneath it.
Yeah, whatever, man. Just mixed it up a little bit like they did with the title sequence in terms of the graphics. It's a minor complaint. It does also feel great on a Monday morning in the UK, Sunday evening in the US, to turn that thing on and hear the HBO noise and then hear the sound of that music come through. It's like really nostalgic memories.
I literally think that's why they did it. They were like, we've already written one of the best TV themes that's ever been written. Why would we try and do that again? Like, we've already got it. We've got the WAV file. Just I'll knock it over to you.
Pop it on.
I also love about this show, so I understand from Rings of Power, they're heavily condensing time because of how long elves live for and how long other species don't. Whereas this is like jumping ahead massively in time. Like first episode went 6 months, second episode went 2 years into the future. Yeah. And I know there's big time jumps to come as well.
I know some of our staff on the US side have seen quite a lot more of it. And they've said that like it jumps,
There's different cast members for the younger cast as well. And also the fact that they've signed on for a season two. Like I said, I've read Fire and Blood, so I kind of know what happens to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see how far down the Targaryen line they go. Even if it could it potentially even one day go all the way through the years to get up to when Mad King Aerys was in charge and then Robert's Rebellion.
They'll definitely do Robert's Rebellion as the end. I think that makes total sense for me.
How far back is House of Dragon compared to Game of Thrones? It's just like 100 years or
200 years. Okay. 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones, but we're already caught up three now, like 2.5. But yes, but there is going to be huge time jumps and there's lots of Targaryen rulers from now up to Game of Thrones. So although fundamentally it doesn't sound like the best show idea, like constantly killing off your main characters and replacing them with new characters, that is kind of the Game of Thrones way to a certain degree.
How good it is that like the current plot threads are about lineage. Mm-hmm. They're about like people wanting to secure a future for their house.
Yeah.
If you skip far enough in time, you get to see their anxieties come true.
Yes.
Like, if their houses completely disappear, it meant that the things that they were worried about right now in the show were actually important.
Yeah.
And, like, to be able to do that on a long enough time frame is, like, a unique thing for this kind of story. Like, that's actually really cool.
And also, like, this... I'm trying not to spoil here, but this is also... I can assure you this is the beginning of the end for the Targaryens. So they've had their peak. This is like, you know, if you watch Game of Thrones, that like the dragons all die out. Obviously, by the end, it's just a mad king ruling things and they have to take him down. There is lots of drama in between then. And seeing these things, not just on the paper, but on as the written word, but seeing them come to life is like super appealing for me.
King Viserys is like, I've noticed in, like throughout the episodes, he mentions that there was, I think, a time before where they're already at like an even greater power and stuff, and there was even a lot more dragons beforehand from understood.
What you're thinking of is Valyria.
That's
100 years before there was the Doom of Valyria, but the Targaryens were actually just one of the families that existed with dragons then. They were ones. I'm really getting into it here. But one of the king's daughters had a vision of the doom of Valyria, so they left. They got laughed at for leaving. But because they were the only ones that left that could ride dragons, they became like a major power. That's basically the short version of it. I'm super into it. Like, I as soon as I started watching the show again, I was all on YouTube theory videos and like doing all my reading again. I was like, I'm very, very heavily invested. But I also think the writing and the performances is just like really, really, really good.
Who knew we could get this out of Paddy Constantine, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's got such a unique character to play as well, because Viserys is... He's a bad king, right? But he's a good man. And it's like, it's a weird sort of dynamic for a Targaryen to be put in power, but not to be abused by that power. And just like the fact that, he doesn't want to force Rhaenyra to do this stuff. He wants her to be willing on it.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Targaryen history is full of some good kings, but mostly kings that abuse their power as well.
So if you even watched, like, you know, Stannis Baratheon would have been the biggest allegory in the other show. Like, he didn't give a fuck. He was like, you're gonna do what I say because I'm the guy.
Yeah, he wasn't even the king. He just wanted.
I don't mean Stannis Baratheon. I mean
Robert Baratheon. Do you mean?
No, I mean Joffrey. Tywin Lannister.
Oh right, it was a nasty piece of work. I could talk about Game of Thrones for hours, but I'm aware that I'm like just rambling.
No, but
here.
It's cool to hear, just because like I don't know much just about that world other than the show and stuff, and I'm just enjoying seeing how, because it's bait from the start that things are going downhill just in terms of like political parties hating each other, and how, like I said, that sort of a encroaching circle on the king, and how he just can't do much despite wanting to be a nice guy, and something's already eating him away anyway.
Literally and metaphorically as well, because we've seen already that, you know, the Iron Throne
is literally killing him. It's so funny, honestly.
Killing him up, literally killing him.
They're like, do you like allegories? Do you like metaphors? do you like that the chair is killing him?
I just thought he caught sepsis or something. Mm-hmm. It's just killing him now.
Every episode they're showing a new wound that he has. But then, the idea there is that the Iron Throne almost has a will of its own. And it's just like, if you can't even sit in this throne without being hurt, then you don't deserve to be king.
Also, superficial thing, but there's more swords on the Iron Throne now than there was before. It's like on the stairs now and stuff. Is there a reason for that?
I think it's just the more closely aligned with the book vision, which was thousands of swords piled like 10, 15 feet high.
Okay.
And I guess it's that, but also, I guess over time,
They tidied it up
and blunted some of the sword ends so people aren't getting cut by it all the time.
I even feel like in the other show there is a line of dialogue that's like, you know, that's not the real Iron Throne or something like that. I feel like I remember that being
that
said.
Does ring a bell. I'm not sure exactly. I also think Rhys Ifans as Otto Hightower, the Hand of the King, is like
very good.
A really, really good performance so far as well. Playing this someone who, you know, has the king's interest in heart and is loyal, but also is plotting behind his back constantly.
His interests come first, even though he's the one that's doing advising. Like, the other advisor that seems to be giving like really good advice that goes against his own interest is like, when is this going to flip? I'm all about this. Yeah.
I can't remember his first name, but his second name's Strong. And he's a very interesting character. Like, the council on the round table. And then also you've got the dynamic of Corlys, the sea snake, and Daemon's alliance as well, and dealing with the crab feeder. And the crab feeder stuff has just presented the coolest imagery as well. Like that, the look of him as well.
Just was a weird just like, guy. He's a little goblin man.
Yeah, it's super weird and I loved it. And we obviously had a spectacular fight scene in the third episode as well. I won't say what happened, but I thought it felt like the Game of Thrones of old and I'm very excited for it to be back. But I understand, your guys' opinions as well.
We'll see. We should come back to this at the end of the season, I think. We should do our first impressions, and then we should do which one won in the end? Which one's the winner of television?
That's the thing. I'm enjoying them for like very different reasons. Like Rings of Power, as of this point, doesn't have all that like political backstabbing that's going to occur. So it's even occurred already in the House of the Dragon. I'm very much enjoying that. And also just like the way families treat each other in Game of Thrones and House of Dragon, it's like, the fucking Otto Hightower being like, you're my daughter, just spend some time with the king. I'm like, that's fucking grim.
Yeah. He doesn't even say it as well. I love that he's like...
He just looks at her and he's like, okay.
Yeah, great. But that she can infer what he wants. Like, yeah, spend some time with the king. Wink.
It's just nasty.
I mean, but elements of it are indicative of medieval Europe, yeah, right?
Yeah, so, for sure.
And also, like, Targaryen history is full of that. In that world, it's established that Targaryens are like gods amongst men, and they can kind of do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, there's a lot about like bloodlines and stuff, and it's like he's of pure Valyrian ascent and stuff. It's like, all right.
but it's all political maneuvering. There's not there's no, apart from Viserys's love for his wife. We know what happens to her. There's never really the mention of love in the show. It's always about political maneuvering and machinations.
I don't get the feeling anyone's going to be hugging each other anytime soon and saying, "Oh man, I love you."
I love it. I love it.
And the
cool thing about it, like what you said, Matt, visiting at the end of the season, we know for a fact that House of Dragons been renewed for a second season. Mm. And I know Amazon have said 5 seasons of Rings of Power. That feels bold. Like, what if the show dies on its ass, like, on the second season? Do you really think they're going to keep spending all that money on this thing?
Yeah, like, that's why I'm, like, intrigued. I feel like House of the Dragon has more of an ability to, like, if things get a little bit weaker, still trot along. But, like, if Rings of Power suddenly takes a nosedive, I'm trying to just imagine what that looks like.
Imagine that they have
a hard time doing that.
Take a step back in the budget for the third season.
Yeah. That's the problem. I think House of the Dragon has been smart in its approach to spending its money on this, like, its visual presentation. It's more about the characters and the dialogue and the story, where Rings of Power is heavily reliant on the way it looks.
Yeah, so they've gone all out for that. And I'm just worried, like, season 4 is just going to be like, guys, small sets, 1 green screen only. We're poor now, I'm sorry.
And puppets.
Yeah.
I don't think Amazon are going poor.
We've only got
soon.
One ring this time, guys.
Okay, we've reduced the amount of rings.
That's what Sauron wanted all along, Jesse.
It's a good cost-saving measure. Yeah, you know, they've factored this into the budget.
Sauron was just about the budget, ultimately. Yeah. That's what he was doing. Mm. He's like, why do we need 19 rings or whatever? I could just have one. That rules them all. Easy. Genius. Cost efficient. Right. There's a before we get onto a little game, there's also that other show with dragons. Welcome to Wrexham. Jesse, have you watched Welcome to Wrexham?
I don't even know what it is. It sounds vaguely football.
Yes. But I wanted to really make sure you watch this show, right?
Oh, okay.
Because
I'm scared now.
No, I think this is your gateway to football, like Drive to Survive was your gateway to F1.
Okay. Is it a documentary?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it is a documentary about Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney buying Wrexham AFC Football Club, who are a small little Welsh team that are in the National League. Sorry, not in the National League. They're below the
main dream.
Pyramid.
They'd love to be in the National League.
And it's a documentary about how not only they bought the club, but then the club, like, adjusting to life being owned by a couple of Hollywood celebrities. Yeah. Matt, have you watched it all?
Yeah. I think the fifth one just came out, which I haven't seen yet. So, I'm up before that point.
And what do you think
I think
so
it's
far?
Great, honestly. I should say I'm ethnically Welsh, so this is my tie to this show. It's like, I want to get a feel for my homeland. and I don't really care about football even slightly, but it's been nice, like, this, like, rural community that kind of the way the show presents it, you know, I realize there's way more to it, but they feel as if the success of their community is inexorably linked to the success of this football team.
Mm-hmm.
And the team hasn't been doing very well for the last, like, 15 years. And so it feels as if the community is kind of, you know, downtrodden as a consequence of that. And so Rob and the more famous one, I can't believe I'm Rob and Ryan.
Everyone loves Rob.
Yeah. Rob and Ryan taking over, like, the first episode where that gets announced. Like, everybody is like, one, what? And two, like, oh my God, what does this mean for the success of our whole, like, Iowa community?
So do you see the fresh perspective from the players, like, before they've been... acquired.
You talk to them afterwards. You don't speak to any of them beforehand, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But even then, the tribulations of them, like, there's one player that's getting paid significantly more than the rest of them. And, like, some of the players don't feel good about that because they're like, well, we're in a terrible division. I won't spoil the joke, but they're in a position where they're, like, really not balling. and there's this one guy that's doing great, and so there's kind of an animosity there too. Like, it's yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, but to be fair to him, that one player was pulling him up by the bootstraps, and he also came from like a league above, and he should be playing a league higher than that as well. So it kind of, I think they're doing the football player thing of, you know, they're taking the piss out of him constantly about it, but they also understand the situation, you know. I think it reminds me of one of my favourite football documentary shows, which is Sunderland Till I Die, which is a fantastic show about a club that was massively on a downward spiral. They managed to film it when they got relegated from the Premier League, and then they got a successive relegation to League One straight afterwards, which is, for a Premier League team, that's a disaster. And it kind of followed them through the journey. And that was also about the fans of Sunderland like living and dying on their team. Their team's success brought success to the city and vice versa. And it reminds me a lot of that in terms of the presentation of Wrexham as a place, and, you know, the fact that it's a struggling town. But with the added interesting element on this one is that we've got two Hollywood celebrities that have swooped in, I should say, and are investing big into this team. But not only are they investing into it, they're clearly passionate about it. They're becoming fans. They care about the details. They're watching all the, they're getting up at ridiculous o'clock to watch the games.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, and I follow Rob McElhenney with a lot of stuff. Like, I listen to Always Sunny podcast, and I follow him on Twitter and things like that. He's always talking about Wrexham. He's always wearing a Wrexham hat. Like, they learnt Welsh as well. Like, they are super invested.
That is very dedicated, actually.
Yeah. I didn't do that.
Yeah. And I think that comes across on screen. It really bleeds through. There is a scene where they talk about the fact that they didn't make the playoffs. And they openly say to each other on the phone, right, we've got to make changes. We've got to get rid of people. And they sack like 10 first team players and the manager almost immediately. Mm. And in any other situation, that would appear like absolutely ruthless and brutal, these people losing their jobs. But there's something about these guys, the way they do it. There's an element of charm to it where you're like, yeah, I respect that. I understand that. And they've just got the best interests of the club.
They do vox pops with the community as well. And they only do it from people that are like, no, they had to. Like, we weren't winning, so why are any of these people still around? Like, that helps ground it in not just like these lads that have swanned in and, you know, think they can change everything.
So, well, that's the
community
thing.
Agrees.
I was really concerned when that first happened. I was like, this is going to look really, even though it's just a part of life with a football team, I thought this is going to make them look like the villain, the bad guy. And then the way it was put together was so clever. Then the fact that I didn't think that at all. And like you said, they have a really interesting element to the show, which they did in Sunderland Till I Die, which is they meet the working class people that are just super fans of Wrexham. And you find out a bit about, there's one guy you find out about, he's just recently gone through a divorce with his wife, and he's looking after his kids, and he doesn't get to see his kids as much anymore. But Wrexham is the thing that he looks forward to every week. And they do a great job of painting a vision of the community, as well as with that juxtaposed with these Hollywood superstars who are in LA taking their calls in these big fancy studios and stuff. But they all feel connected as well. It's a fantastic show so far. I didn't get to it till this week. And then I watched all four episodes in one night because I was so invested in it.
Is it meant to be sort of like a continuous sort of show like Drive to Survive? Because basically every new season of F1, they're probably just going to be continuing this.
I reckon it'll depend on the success of this. I can't imagine that they wouldn't do a second season. Like, they must already be filming for it.
But I mean, the reality is, this is like when you've read the books for like House of Dragon and Lord. But I know what happens in this season, what they're covering right now, because it's happened in real life. So there is drama at the end of last season, and then obviously we've got what's going on right now with Wrexham.
They're doing pretty good, aren't they, at the minute?
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it.
Okay, nice. What I also loved as well, something that can only really happen because they're celebrities, is in the most recent one that I watched, it's about their branding, them getting TikTok and Expedia on board as sponsors. Like, couldn't have happened unless it was these two. And so it means that with better sponsorship, they get more money to be able to invest in. And like, that is so interesting as an idea, that before it was like some tractor company that was on the uniform, and now it's like, you know, massive brand.
Cool.
They are the lowest league of professional players. Mm-hmm. Like, below them, below those leagues, it's all amateur people. So like, the money in sponsorship is practically nothing at that level. So the tractor company probably paid them a pittance to sponsor it. But now they're sponsored by TikTok. And like they got that sponsorship agreement because Ryan Reynolds agreed to do a few TikToks about them or with them. It's like a different worked. Stratosphere. Yeah. And it's crazy.
It genuinely sounds interesting. Like, I'm not interested in football in any capacity or, you know, most sports, I guess. But wasn't too long ago when I watched, I think it's called The Last Dance, which is a basketball documentary.
Yeah,
don't care about basketball, but it seems interesting. I like the stories of, you know, what's actually affecting people within these sports, less so the sport itself. So it does sound cool.
Mate, all sports are human stories at the end of the day. You know, it's about, you know, trying to improve and trying to better oneself and dealing with the struggles. And ultimately, football is a game of hope, right? It's always... you're hoping what your team can do and you're looking for the vision of what you can achieve. And that, you know, that you don't have to be into sports to enjoy that. I would say check it out. Like the 30-minute episodes.
I'll definitely watch it.
Give it a whirl.
Do you like the inalienable power of the human spirit? Check out Welcome to Wrexham.
Right, so Matt, you've prepared a little game for us. We're not going to call this an endless search game because this feels... not like that. We've got another one of those coming up as well. So let's just dive into this.
Search never happens. sure. Let's do this. So last time I was on, I did a fake anime names quiz, and it was so popular and successful. I think we looked at the stats.
Was it?
We saw the numbers, millions.
Yeah. And so we've done that again, except not anime this time. It's Game of Thrones names.
Ooh.
Have I made them up? Or are they real ones?
I do feel like I've got a bit of an advantage. You've
got a home team advantage on this
one. But although saying that, I guarantee you I'll embarrass myself.
Yeah.
The thing is, I remember my older brother, he's addicted to those books. And he was reading the books whilst having the audiobook out loud back when we used to live together. What? So I heard so much shit from that world. So I feel like maybe some names might be like deeply... reserved in like the data banks of my brains.
Wait, so he'd read the book and play the audiobook at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
I mean, well,
he liked the guy who narrated it, I think.
Yeah, but why not just listen to it?
Oh, I guess so.
He just wanted to do something with his hands.
Yeah.
To be fair,
if you were reading
too
quickly, would you have to speed the.
I guess it's like it's a way to pace the book.
Yeah,
instead
sure.
of just, right. you know, if you're like glancing over stuff and then you'll be like, oh, I actually forgot what I read a paragraph ago, I guess.
I
criticized it, but I can think of several times where I've read scripts of movies and stuff and watched the scenes and read along the scripts just to see what's changed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, absolutely, I've done stuff like that myself now that I think about it.
Right. Name number one.
Okay. So we just got to say true or false, right? And me and Jesse have prepared images on our phone that say true or false. So we're. I don't like it in these games when someone says true and it says, I'll say false then,
because you said, I want a real game.
We'll do 3, 2, 1, then we reveal our answer.
All right, I'll say the name and then I'll count down.
Okay.
Courtney Penrose. 3, 2, 1, by not giving you enough time, sorry.
That's right.
That says true, but the focus is being silly.
It is correct. Courtney Penrose is
one. So we both said true. Yeah, we should probably read out what we're actually saying.
Yeah.
Wrexham.
I should have added Wrexham as one of these. That would have been funny.
Davros Wrexham. Does sound like it could be like a Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Oh, you've spoiled one. Roderick Stark. 3, 2, 1.
I don't know. I'm going to go.
Both said false.
Only because there is a Roderick and there is Starks, but I don't remember the two ever being connected.
It was real. That was a real one as well.
Oh, shit.
I don't remember a Roderick.
Well,
there
is a Sir Roderick who lives at Winterfell, but he's not a Stark family member, so that's why I thought you were trying to trick us.
double bluffed. I meant to do that. Walter Hwent with an H. Ooh. 3, 2, 1. Jesse's gone full. Oh, both false. I'm sorry to tell you, that was real.
What? Who's called Walter?
Myself. Yeah. Is that Walter Frey? Or is it Walter, Frey, actually? Yeah. Oh, no.
Walter.
Mark with a Q. Grafton.
Mark Grafton?
Yep. Mm. 3, 2, 1. Is that true for both of
you? Yeah, that is a true. It's just
hold it closely to your face, Jesse. Hold it closely.
There you go. True.
Congratulations. So far, you're on even points.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. I should just hold it right next to my face.
Yeah, hold
right?
it near your face. Yeah.
Right. Next one. Aiden Mormont.
Oh.
3, 2, 1. It's false. You absolutely correct. Said so false. Well done.
We've got to read out what we're saying here.
Oh yeah, yeah. False. No
we'll
one would be
this
called
for next time.
Oh, Aiden seems like too much of like a modern name. Yeah. To be
do you know what?
In a Game of Thrones setting.
I think I can guess how you came up with that one.
Because so obviously Littlefinger's real name is.
Yeah, Littlefinger's real name is Aiden, and yeah. then the Mormont is obviously a family name.
I've been trying to be a little bit tricky with some of these, like to try and like point you in the direction of like, oh, I think I know that. Right, this one's, I think I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly, which I better because I made it up.
I don't know, you just gave us a big hint there.
Melantha Blackwood. All right, 3, 2, 1. Mm. Ooh, first little change.
So I said false around. And Jesse said true.
It is true. Yep.
Oh, God damn it.
Blackwood seems like a fantasy name, like.
It just seemed, if it read to me like you'd picked two names and put them together.
Yeah, totally. next one is Bill Rowan.
Bill Rowan.
That isn't like I haven't just put quotations. like his nickname is Bill. Bill Rowan. 3, 2, 1.
False.
That's false. Both said false. Congratulations. You both,
nice.
You're both good at this game. I thought you were going to have an advantage, Dale, but...
so did so I. To be fair, I've only recognised about two of these
based on
names.
Just like whatever sounds like too modern or... Yeah, that's what I'm trying to base off.
Next one is Alan Tarley.
That sounds real.
Okay.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
True.
Ooh, I said false. Split. It is actually real this time, so
what?
That's another Jesse.
I thought that was another one where you'd just like, oh, how's Tarly? I'll just stick a name on front.
And Alan sounds like a funny one to do. Yeah, that's why I picked it. I was like, Alan's going in.
It was like in the third episode of House of Dragon where they had Jason Lannister.
I was going to say, sorry, that was going to kick this off. This is why I wanted to do this, because Jason Lannister sounds like such a fake name.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Cedric Payne.
Okay.
Cedric Payne.
It sounds very Harry Potter.
wait.
Dale's like searching deep within his brain.
I'm just like, whether you're trying to trick me or not. Like, because I know, yeah. Okay, all right.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
True.
False.
Another split. It is true, actually.
Yeah,
what is happening?
So obviously I know it's a Cedric, and I know Ilan Payne as well. I thought that was another one where you were just trying to.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right, we could potentially save ourselves some trouble here. Because I've got three more.
Okay.
But Jesse's currently in the lead, so
imagine
Jesse would have
Lord
to,
of the Rings one, and I was fucking up.
Yeah. Jesse would have to lose this in order for. So we'll just play until either there's a draw or a clear winner. Dorian Greyjoy.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
True.
Is it?
It's fake, mate. That's
isn't Dorian Grey just an actual character?
Yep, that's also
he's a Greyjoy, but yeah. Fuck, how did I not think of that? Oh my God.
Congratulations to Jesse Gomez for being the Game of Thrones expert.
You are, mate.
Yeah.
I bow down to your greatness, first of his name, Jesse the King of the Andals from now on.
Who's Dorian Grey again? Isn't he that guy that painting dies or some shit? Right.
Yep.
I know my Dorian Greys.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. What do I win?
It's my respect.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's good. I've always had your respect, Dale. It's okay.
It's wavered. yesterday, Matt, you put out a tweet on IGN UK Twitter and asked our audience to send in some of their feedback. So shall we read some out?
Love
that. I'll go for the first couple. This one's from John Roger - Vegas Vlog. He says, House of the Dragon thoughts. I bloody love it. It feels like early season Game of Thrones, but with the latter season budgets. The cast has grown on me, loving the political wrangling, and Matt Smith is superb in his role as Daemon Targaryen. Oh, and dragons.
love a dragon, don't I?
Yeah. I think that pretty much sums up how I feel about it. It's like, yeah, feels like early Game of Thrones because of like the political chess parts and whatnot, but then with a bit of a better budget.
Yeah.
That really points it.
And also having dragons be a key part in every episode. Like,
yeah, I like dragons.
We also got a tweet from Kieran who just says, Matt Smith, and then he puts a little thumb up. So I think that means he supports Matt Smith.
I've described Matt Smith in this show as kind of the Poochie, because any scene that he's not in, you're like, where's Matt Smith?
Where is Daemon Targaryen? Yeah. All the characters should be asking where Daemon is. cool, Jesse, do you want to read a couple?
Yeah, why not? This is from Paul. He says, enjoying both. Thumbs up emoji. Having a good Thursday through Monday of shows with Wrexham thrown in there too.
More Wrexham, you know, love. It's actually, the year of dragons.
When does Wrexham go live on Disney Plus?
I think it's Thursday morning, yeah.
Oh, shit. So Monday is House of Dragons. Wrexham is, what do you say, Thursday?
I think so, yeah.
And then Friday is Rings of Power. This is a fantastic combination of just powerhouse TV.
Throw a little She-Hulk in there as well.
I'm not bothered to watch that.
I love that we're combining, like, everyone's just accepting that Welcome to Wrexham is part of the great fantasy like, resurgence, even though it's got nothing to do with it, apart from there's a dragon on the Welsh flag. That's it.
Got another one from, I think it's Chris Boots. I'm really enjoying House of the Dragon with its more intimate storytelling and deliberate pace. I'm not as hot on Rings of Power, possibly because I know exactly how key characters' stories play out, so there's no real sense of dread or urgency, but it's still early days. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm looking forward just to seeing how everything I know is going to be visually represented, I guess, compared to whatever my knowledge of House of the Dragons is, which apparently is immense.
That is interesting, actually, because that's like the opposite of my opinion. I know what happens to a certain degree in House of Dragons, but I'm enjoying it more. Whereas Ring of Power, I don't really, apart from the fact I know Sauron forges the rings, like I don't really know much else, but I'm not enjoying it as much. So that's interesting.
Who wants to read next?
Matt, do you want to do a couple more?
Michael Gulliver has said, I'm personally waiting for Game of Thrones to finish before starting Lord of the Rings.
Ooh, bold.
How are you coping with juggling the two? Are you waiting for one to finish as well? Tell me your secrets.
You've got to blast through all of them, man. I couldn't wait.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody who's doing that. I think everyone's committed to watching both at the same time.
Yeah.
I like having a little treat, you know? Little treat drops into my lap every week. Just be like, oh, I love to watch a little show. I feel like if I just sit and do one thing for, you know, however long, like the 6 or 8 hours it would take to watch one of these shows, I'd feel like I'm just wasting my time personally. That's a lovely day that I've just missed. Little itty bit of time. That's perfect for me.
Yeah.
I always feel like I've got at least 2 or 3 shows on the go as well. Like I never just only watch one show because especially when it feels like we're getting a little bit back to the appointment viewing of weekly viewing, especially when you've got a week to wait in between episodes, it's like having like knowing that another episode of the other TV show you're watching coming 3 or 4 days later, like helps massively. Nice.
I'm watching a little bit of The Resort.
Okay.
Not great, but it is fine.
You're not really selling it to me.
Yeah, but I also think that it would kind of, it's one of those ones that is like so okay that if it was a season of television all at once, I don't think I would like it.
Okay.
But watching it episode by episode is giving me a little bit of space to just like think about its storytelling a little bit.
Do you want to read the next one, Matt?
I'd love to. Swan Levitt has said, I thoroughly enjoyed both and would recommend all. That being said, could happily put both aside now and never finish them. No real drama. Yeah, I get it personally. Yeah. Like if something's okay, you're like, it's good.
Enough.
It's not impacting my life enough for me to bother. But if it falls out of a DVD case and then ends up the DVD rolls into the DVD player and then I accidentally watch it.
I guess this is inherently the problem with prequelitis, right? With both of these shows obviously being prequels, we kind of know how it all ends for both of them. So they're like with Game of Thrones, it was like this desperation to know how it all came together at the end. So I get what you're saying a little bit there.
And We've got another similar comment from Liam that says that House of the Dragon has great visuals like that of later seasons, but more focused singular storylines and tighter settings. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, visuals and music are absolutely flawless. Episode 1 was slower due to exposition. Episode 2 was fantastic, seeing Durin with Elrond, which is exactly my opinion. Liam,
yeah.
We're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah. Jesse, do you want to read the last one?
Yes, from Gareth Bard? How do you say that? Baird?
Gareth
B. Classic Gareth B. Very much enjoying both, and I like that they have different feels to them. I'm about to start cracking into Sandman too, so my fantasy needs are utterly fulfilled. It's a good show, actually. There's a lot of good stuff to watch right now.
Yeah. If you like Sandman and Game of Thrones, you can check out the little clip that we did on TikTok with Jesse and I meeting Gwendolyn Christie.
Yep, there we go. That camera had to be raised up fairly high on that particular shot.
I haven't told this joke on the show, actually. I might as well. So when we do that red carpet, I haven't put the mic very close to some other actor. And Jesse reminds me, like, hey, when you next talk to somebody, make sure that the mic is really close to their face. And then Gwendolyn Christie, the tallest person that exists, walks around the corner. I'm like, mate, I'm going to have a little bit more trouble this time.
She's the final boss of that red carpet.
I thought you were going to say that the mic tipple was like brushing her face, like you were getting inside there. awesome. Right. It's now time. Now it's time for the Endless Search.
Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
We're gonna play Go On Name Them. It's a fantasy version of Go On Name Them. And if you're not familiar with that game, basically, I'm going to explain a topic and say there's this X amount of them, and then what you've got to do between Matt and Jesse is bid and try and outbid each other. Whoever wins the bid has to guess them. If they get one wrong or they miss one, then the other person gets the point. That's the game. This is all themed around Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. There's a mix of both. Right, so who wants to start off with the first bid? I'm going to tell you what it is in a second. I just want to know who starts first.
I feel brave.
Okay, good.
Who is it? Matt's bidding first. Okay, well, Matt, you chose wisely because the first one is an easy one. We're leaning in. No. We're coming in easy. Mm. There are 9 members of the Fellowship of the Ring. How many of them can you name? What's your bid?
Oh, God. I have to go high on this one because I know that Jesse can outdo me. But I think I can do... At least 8, I think I can do.
You bid in 8? Yeah. Okay. Jesse? Are you going to bid 9 or are you going to concede?
I'll have to go 9.
Yeah, of course you do, mate. I knew. Right. 9 members of the Fellowship of the Ring. And Jesse, I'm going to be extra strict with you. I want proper names as well.
What do you mean proper name? Like full entire names? That would be bullshit.
Well, let's see how you get on. Okay,
well, you have... Frodo, Merry, Sam,
Pippin. One at a time. Frodo, okay, Frodo, what's his surname?
Frodo Baggins.
Okay, right, next one.
You can't get me on the surname. That'd be such bullshit.
I had to make it difficult some way. Frodo Baggins, 1.
Okay, then you have Samwise Gamgee.
Yes, 2.
Then you have, is it Merry Brandybuck?
Yeah, close enough. It's Merodach Merry Brandybuck, yeah.
Okay, then you have Pippin, whose name I can't remember fully.
Come back to it.
That's such bullshit.
Okay, I'll let you. It's Peregrine Took.
Peregrine Took, that's it. And then you have...
You're a fool of a Took.
Yeah, I know. Then you have Aragorn.
Yeah.
Boromir.
Yeah.
Legolas.
Yeah.
Gimli.
Yeah.
Gandalf.
He's gone.
Boromir was the one that I couldn't quite grasp.
Oh, he's my favourite. Sean Bean.
Oh, that was the easy one. We've come in easy. Right. We're going to something a little bit more difficult. So, in the books of Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, every chapter is themed around a character's point of view. Not including the prologues or epilogues or any spin-offs, how many of the 24 main character point of views can you name?
Oh, I'm fucked.
Jesse, how many do you want to bid? I've got a full list of all the characters. There's 24 and they're all main character point of view chapters.
5
Jesse bids 5 Matt, what are you saying?
Yeah, I might as well just do 6
Okay. Jesse, you got an improve on that bid?
I'm trying to... It's based on characters' perspectives, yeah?
So, yeah, the chapters are written and they'll say the character's name and it's based on their point of view. But there are... In terms of the main ones, not including... There's some weird ones in, like, prologues and epilogues, but there's 24 of them that feature in all the books so far.
Okay.
And then they are main characters of the show as well, obviously.
What have you gone with, Matt? Do you say 7?
6.
He said 6.
Okay, I'll go with 7.
Okay.
Go on, Matt. 8.
Oh.
That's fucked up. I can't compete with that.
Are you selling Matt to name 8?
Yes.
Okay. Matt, go on, name 8 of them.
So I haven't read the books, but I'm pretty sure just through osmosis that I know there's one where Jaime Lannister is one.
Jaime Lannister is one, yes.
Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, yes.
Sansa?
Let me just double check the list. Yes, Sansa, yes.
So this is the one I'm going to have to say it because I want to know more than anything, even if I don't win. But is Reek a character?
Gonna need his proper name, I'm afraid.
So that was it. I was like, is it actually? Because I think he does it as Reek, though, doesn't he?
Not according
Reek
to this
doc.
Okay. I don't want to say the name because it gives it away. But he had 6 chapters in The Clash of Kings and 7 in Dance of Dragons. So.
Mm. Oh, fucking. I've actually even lost his name now.
Okay,
maybe
move on.
I know it's a Greyjoy,
on.
But fuck. Arya.
Yes, Arya, yep.
How many have I got so far?
You've got 4 so far. You need another 4.
Brienne.
Brienne of Tarth. Yes, only not until the 4th book, though, so you got a lucky down there. You got 5, you need 3 more.
Ned.
Eddard Stark, yes, I'll let you have that.
Catelyn?
Catelyn Stark, yes, you need 1 more.
Oh, God, this sucks. it'd be really funny if I was like Hodor.
Can confirm you don't want to say that.
Yeah, nice.
Cheating.
What is the fucking Greyjoy's name?
What Move on his... from him. Who yeah, are the other main characters?
It's just, it's a little brain drip now. I'm like, all of them are just like, I've lost any other character name. And the one I don't know.
That's the worst thing about this game. It makes makes you want to kill yourself.
Yeah. Oh my God. What other really characters are in this
you, you need
show?
One more, and I'm going to have to I'm gonna have to push you for an answer.
Tyrion Lannister.
Tyrion Lannister, there we go.
Thank God.
ones you could have had was Bran Stark, Daenerys, Tyrion, Davos, Theon Greyjoy.
Theon.
Jaime Lannister. Oh, did you say Jaime?
Jaime.
Yeah. Samwell, Cersei, Aeron Greyjoy, Asha Greyjoy. There's a load of other ones here that you might not know. Melisandre, even Barristan Selmy, John Connington.
I read that earlier when I was doing the other quiz that she was a point of view character at some point. Oh God,
you got the point. It's all good. Mm. You got the point. Right, next one. We're back to Middle Earth. So this one you might be picked apart. We'll see how it goes. But I found went searching for the answer and I found someone who appears to be a fan's opinion, but it was very very well written that I imagine it's correct. So. Don't shoot the messenger, is what I'm saying. There have been 9 people who have worn the One Ring at one point. How many of those 9 can you name? Worn is liberally used.
I know that I can do 3 because I can't remember one of the lads' names that might make it 4.
Okay, but so Matt, are you
bidding
3?
Any more than that, you will win.
You got to bid each other, mate. You got to play poker.
Sorry. What did you say? 3?
I think 3 is probably my max. So if
Don't
you can do more
that,
than that,
I'm gonna go with 4.
Is there no improvement on that, Matt?
Ugh. God, it would be tough.
Don't risk it, Matt.
Oh, no, I genuinely can't do it.
It's because Jesse doesn't want to risk it. Yeah,
you're right, I could have bluffed it, but no.
Yeah. People don't play poker enough in this game. We need to get to the core experience of trying to win.
Please bid more.
Right, Jesse, we're going with four for you then.
Okay, so number one, Sauron.
Yeah.
Number two, Isildur.
What's even one of my four? He's the ring man.
Jesse's doing it. Jesse's doing it in order so far as well. So it's Sauron, Isildur.
Sauron, Isildur, and then Gollum / Sméagol.
Yeah.
Do they count as two different guys?
Totally.
It's on the list as one.
Sauron, Isildur, Gollum, Bilbo next.
Yes. There you go. Then, you didn't even say Frodo.
Well, no, because then Frodo is next afterwards.
Yeah, but you've got your four.
Oh, fuck.
Right. How many of the nine can you actually name? I'm curious.
I feel like the last person would be Sam. I think Sam holds it for like a brief moment.
Yes.
And then maybe Tom Bombadil.
Yes, you're also correct.
And I think that's all I can think of.
So you only, I have noticed, sorry, that Sméagol Gollum is on here twice because it's Sméagol back when he first got it and Gollum right at the end. The only Tom Bombadil was obviously one, he briefly held it for only a brief second. Same with Sam, I believe. The other one you missed was Deagle, who was the one that found the ring when Sméagol killed him.
Man.
Yeah,
can't
remember. Sideman Deagle. well played, well played. Right, we're moving on.
He forgot the ring, man.
This is
That's the clip for this episode, by the way.
Right, we're back to Westeros. In the very first episode of Game of Thrones, there are 34 main characters, and this is not including White Walker number one and horse rider number four and stuff. There is 34 main named characters in the show. How many of them can you name? Matt, start off the bidding.
15.
Whoa.
The fuck. It's ridiculous, man.
Jesse, can you improve on 15?
No, I absolutely can't. I cannot remember their names. Go ahead.
Okay, 15. Go for it, Matt.
Let's do the Stark kids first. So, John, Arya. He's Jon Snow at that point as well.
Jon Snow, Arya Stark,
Sansa.
Yeah.
God, I can't even remember the. God, no. I gotta stop drinking, lads.
Stop fixating on the one you can't remember. You just gotta move to the other ones.
Theon Greyjoy now.
Yeah.
You got Ned Stark.
Yeah.
Catelyn.
Yeah.
Bran.
Yeah.
Littlefinger. Is he in the first season?
He is in the first episode. I'm just looking for him on the list. His name's not Littlefinger, obviously. So
Little lad.
Robert Baratheon.
Yeah.
Davos Seaworth.
Who the fuck is that?
Or is he not in it?
Davos is not in the first. Davos was the Hand of the King to Stannis, and then eventually was working with Jon Snow.
Oh,
I should have said Stannis. Yeah,
Stannis Renly. I don't think Stannis is in the first episode either.
Really?
No,
is Stannis the big lad king, the big mad boy?
I don't know who you're talking about.
That's Robert.
Robert's the guy who gets killed, right? With a boar, doesn't he?
I'm also looking for Peter Baelish, Littlefinger, on here, and I can't see him on this list, so I think you got it wrong earlier on. I'm sure he was in the first episode, but maybe not.
The Lannisters are in it.
We've got Ed, Robert, Jaime, Catelyn, Cersei, Daenerys, Jorah Mormont, Viserys, which is Daenerys' brother, who dies quite early on. Then all the Stark kids, like you said, Joffrey Baratheon, the Hound.
In there as well.
You got what, sorry?
Get a little Khal Drogo.
Khal Drogo as well. Tyrion, Maester, and then you got like Maester Luwin and Roderick Cassel and people that you're not necessarily.
The real hitters. Yeah. The real heart of the show.
He's even got Jon Arryn on here, but Jon Arryn in the first episode is dead.
Corpse,
He's a corpse with stones over his eyes. So I don't know if that counts, but yeah.
Everyone's favourite character. Yeah.
And Hodor. Hodor was on the list as well. You missed Hodor.
Oh, man.
So Jesse.
Betrayed by Hodor.
Jesse, you have won the game 3-1, but there's one more to play for fun.
Oh, for fun. This is already so stressful.
And this is the last one. So this is about Middle Earth locations. Honestly, there is no list I can find that tells me how many locations there are. There's just fucking loads, right? How many Middle Earth locations can you name?
Are you talking about, you're just talking about anywhere?
So right? let me give you the categories, what I can see on the Wikipedia page. Okay. So we've got, there's a list of regions of Middle-earth, Middle-earth mountains, Middle-earth rivers, and other locations, which would seem to be cities, towns, villages, that sort of thing.
Oh, God. That's too many.
There is loads on here.
Why did Tolkien make a place that seems so real?
How many do you think you can name? Come on, mate.
10?
10. Jesse bids 10. Matt, what
And there's
say?
Probably like 500
I
as well.
I cannot beat 10.
Okay, all right. Jesse, going for 10 for fun. Let's see what you got.
We have Weathertop.
I mean, I'm trusting you that that's there, because there's a long list here. Hang on, let me do a search. Weathertop, yes.
Weathertop. I'm basing it off. I'm gonna go with like mountainy places.
Okay.
First, Mount Doom.
Yes.
Amon Hen.
Yes, that's the first one on the list. Yeah.
The Misty Mountains.
Yeah, what Led Zeppelin famously sang about.
Yes. And then let's just go with a region. Gondor.
Yep.
Isengard.
Taking the hobbits to Isengard.
Khazad Dûm.
Right, you're on 7.
Helm's Deep.
8.
The Anduin River.
I might have to search that one. Anduin.
It's where they take the Buckleberry Ferry.
I mean, I know you're right, but I just yep, we got it.
And is this 10?
You're one more to get.
Lothlórien.
Nice, very good.
Go. No love for Minas Tirith.
Did I not say? Oh, no, I said Helm's Deep. Yeah, there we go.
I love the name Minas Tirith.
I know, it's one that sticks in my head as
satisfying
well.
Satisfying on the tongue.
Yeah.
Awesome. Jesse, you have proved yourself to be quiz master today.
Absolutely. Are you the expert at Lord of the Rings, but you're expert on Game of Thrones as well.
I know, what a winner.
Awesome. That's it. What we want to hear from you, though, is more opinions on the shows. We want to know what you like about the show so far, what you don't like, and also, you know, be bold. What do you think's better so far? Like, especially
really
as
would like to come back and do this like at the end of the season as well. So maybe we'll save those for that episode.
I think it'd be interesting. It's also a tough show to deal with in terms of spoilers and stuff as well. So I mean, I would say maybe we could have a spoiler chat, but also, those spoilers are kind of already out there for some stuff anyway. I suppose we don't know officially who the stranger is in Rings of Power yet. So
it's pretty bait.
I know, but it's pretty obvious, right? But we won't say. But that's it, yeah. Write in IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. And what a good chat that was. A little fantasy chat. We need some fantasy music. What's got the better music? I vote Game of Thrones at the end.
Wrexham. Whatever their football theme is.
What is it? It's a Bob Dylan cover, I think, in the intro. Yeah.
There we go.
We'll play that. Times are changing. I think it is. All right. Take care, guys. Bye.
Goodbye.
And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming, quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that. As well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.